This is Jameson Morton, and you're listening to Legalist Rainmaker Podcast, where we interview attorneys at top law firms about how they made partner. Our guest today on the podcast is Lloyd Lim, partner at Reed Smith. With over 15 years of experience in bankruptcy law, Lloyd is an expert on bankruptcy and insolvency matters. Since 2017, Super Lawyers has consistently included Lloyd on their list of Texas rising stars, and we're very lucky to have him on our show. Lloyd, could you start us off with an introduction to your firm and your practice as a whole?
Sure. So Reed Smith is an international firm with offices in the United States, Asia, and Europe. We have a focus on financial services, and we do all kinds of cases from litigation cases to transactional deals. We tend to focus in on the larger size deals, and we work with a lot of financial institutions. We also do a lot of work with private equity and the larger multinational corporations across the area. My expertise is in insolvency and bankruptcy, and I focus in on Chapter 11 work, both on the creditor side and on the corporate trust side.
That was a great overview. Thanks for that. And since you mentioned Chapter 11 bankruptcy, could you walk us through some of its key features? You know, like how does a Chapter 11 bankruptcy differ from other chapters of bankruptcy, like Chapter 7, for example?
Well, Chapter 7s are a lot less complex than your Chapter 11 case. Chapter 7s, you basically have a debtor file for bankruptcy, and he's throwing the keys at you. And he's saying, I don't want to operate this anymore. Let's appoint an independent trustee. And the trustees are independent fiduciaries who are appointed by the U.S. trustee here locally or in every jurisdiction. And that trustee gets in there and starts taking control and shutting down the company and then just liquidating assets. In the 7 scenario, you try to work closely with the creditor like I represent, and you try to get them to get the most value possible from your assets as it goes through liquidation, or agree that those assets can be abandoned to you so that you can conduct your own liquidation of the assets. Chapter 11s are a lot more complex. I mean, it takes a lot of negotiations in those cases in order to get the result that you want. Sometimes you're in a position where you have to make a new loan to this bankrupt entity just so that you can try to salvage your previous investment. Sometimes you realize in the Chapter 11 case that there is no reorganization possible, and then you try to work with the debtor to run a controlled sales process in order for there to be a maximization of value for your client and its assets. And sometimes you just have to put your head down and litigate the issues that are prevalent in the case and fight the debtor on what it wants to do in its plan and fight the debtor on cash collateral issues and fight the debtor on new expenditures and just try to get the best plan treatment that is possible for your client.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Lloyd, you know, delving a little deeper into that issue, based on your experience, what are some of the most common reasons companies file for bankruptcy or go bankrupt?
A lot of it is bad debt. They over-lever themselves, and so they'll want to expand or they'll want to expand too quickly, and they engage in some kind of financial transaction. For example, they'll issue $1 billion worth of bonds at unsustainable interest rates, and they will run into some issue with their business. Oil prices will decline in the oil industry, or their product doesn't sell as fast as they wanted it to. Or, for example, I was in the iHeartMedia case recently. They acquired another company, and it was very expensive to acquire that company. So they acquired a lot of debt with regard to that kind of transaction, and they just couldn't sustain the debt payments, and they couldn't continue as a going concern because their liquidity just couldn't pay the bank debt.
Right. And, you know, we've seen a lot of that since the 2008 financial crisis, a lot of bad debt leading to bankruptcies. But in your observation, how has the market evolved since then?
Well, bankruptcy has become a lot more streamlined since 2008. In 2008, after the real estate crash, as you know, we had a glut of bankruptcy cases, a lot of what are called single asset real estate cases that were occurring at that time. And those taught the bankruptcy bar a lot of lessons with regard to how you can expedite a bankruptcy case, and in many times how you can avoid bankruptcy altogether throughout a court workout. Then recently, over the last 3 or 4 years, we've seen the energy crash, especially where I am. I'm in Houston, Texas. So we have a lot of energy companies down here that have gone bankrupt as a result of that crash. And now we're seeing, as a result of those cases, we're seeing cases that are prepackaged or a pre-negotiated basis where all the heavy lifting of the case goes on prior to the case being filed. And you file the case with restructuring support agreements where the key parties have already agreed to certain remedies or certain treatment of their claims or conversions of debt to equity or however you're going to handle the restructuring. Instead of a company just nakedly filing bankruptcy and trying to figure out its way through the bankruptcy process as it goes, as what we were seeing in the 2006-2008 beginning.
Absolutely. These are great insights, and we appreciate you sharing them on the show with us. Now, switching to our main topic today, we'd love to hear your career story. You know, what was your first major case?
Oh, that was a long time ago. It was a preference litigation. We were sued by a Chapter 7 trustee, or my client, Noel Inc., was sued by a Chapter 7 trustee. They were claiming that they were owed over $10 million for payments that were made during the 90 days prior to bankruptcy. It was filed in Dallas. I originally went to school at SMU, so I had a law school. I went to work for a law firm in Dallas. And while I was in Dallas at Winstead, there was somebody looking for local counsel. I was a fifth-year associate at that point. To handle the preference lawsuit, and I was able to get into contact with the general counsel of Noel Inc., who's sitting in Pennsylvania, East Greenburg, Pennsylvania, and got his information. Aggressively called him and told him I could do it, and he had enough confidence to allow me to bring in the case. Had me identify a partner that could help me with the work, and we did, and we were able to bring that case in. We billed a ton of fees on that case, probably over $1 million, and did a 9-day trial. Were successful on that trial, and went all the way to the Fifth Circuit and got affirmed. So we were very proud of that case.
That is a very impressive case to bring in as a fifth-year associate, and I'm sure some of our audience listening right now are wondering how they could do the same. So Lloyd, do you have any tips regarding business development?
Yeah, definitely what I would say is get out there. Go to bar events. Go to anywhere that potential clients may be at. So early on in my career, I used to go to a lot of like young lawyers associations meetings and other types of lawyers clubs and thought, you know, those were the best ways to generate business. And that could be if your business relies on referrals from other lawyers. But I soon realized that for my practice in the bankruptcy practice, I had to be going to meetings where there would be business people, where there would be bankers, where there would be people that are in financial industries, in financial services. So, you know, go out there and go to the meetings, go to the CFA, go to the local chamber of commerce meetings, pass out cards to the business folks there, make contacts with people at your age level, because those people will also grow in their profession as you're going to grow in your profession, and they're going to take on their own files. And through those files, if they have established a relationship with you, they're going to start looking for you and they're going to start sending you work. But you've got to go to organizations and places where clients are going to be. And you've got to talk to people aggressively at those, you know, cordially, friendly, but aggressively. Follow up with them, take them to lunch, do everything you can. I mean, it takes a lot of dedication to keep on people. But, you know, you have to have a lot of points of contacts with the people that you meet at these associations. And you'll have to get involved in the association, serve on a board, do something that gets your name out there so people know who you are. And that's how you start developing your own book of business.
That makes sense. Absolutely. And in addition to, you know, developing a robust professional network, would you also recommend associates to get hands-on business experience? You know, that's something that's come up repeatedly on the podcast, and I wonder what you think of it. You know, is business experience something you look for when you hire associates?
I do look for that as well, especially in the bankruptcy area. Someone who's been in the business world and understands how businesses work, how they operate. Someone that can read a balance sheet. Someone that has some familiarity with economics. Someone that doesn't just have a law degree that's liberal arts based or something like that. So some real world experience is very helpful. But I think at the end of the day, when I'm hiring junior associates, I'm looking more for just willingness to work hard and willingness to put in a lot of time and effort. As you progress and you're hiring more mid-level associates, then you're looking at more of the real-world experience. You're looking at more of at what cases they've done. You're looking at what organizations they're involved in, because you want to be able to know that they're going to develop their own book of business someday. And you also want to see what synergies you can create with them with regard to who they may know that they can introduce you to, and then who you could introduce them to in order to expand those relationships. So those are the kinds of things that I look for. I
appreciate that. It's great to hear your take on that matter. And with that, Lloyd, you know, I do have one last set of questions for you. Have you ever used litigation funding, and what role do you see litigation funding playing in the bankruptcy space?
Yeah, I've used it before, and I have seen it on other occasions been used. Bankruptcy type tends to focus on two different areas. There's the bankruptcy lawyers that do a lot of transactional type work, and then there's the bankruptcy lawyers that do a lot of in-court litigation work. I straddle the fence most of the time, but I tend to lean more towards the litigation side. And one of my first clients was a Chapter 7 trustee in the Dallas area. And, you know, a lot of times he would send me cases where, you know, there's a potential big recovery out there for the estate, but the estate has no funds for which to run a complex litigation. So litigation funding in that context is invaluable, because you can bring somebody in who's willing to take the risk with you. And yeah, sometimes it's a little expensive, but otherwise there'd be no ability to make a recovery, and creditors would get nothing. In those types of situations, I think it's very, very helpful.
All right. Thanks for listening. Legalist is a tech-driven litigation finance firm that helps lawyers get paid. Rate our podcast and give us a review wherever you find your podcasts. See you next time.